Hello and welcome to this Royal College of General Practitioners produced podcast on the Quality and Outcomes Framework, or QOF, QI for short. My name is Joe Bestford. I'm a Senior Project Manager working in the RCGP's Primary Care Quality Improvement Team. You'll be familiar with QOF from the point of view of your day job in general practice, but we're here today to talk about the QOF Quality Improvement Modules and the work of the RCGP through its QOF QI project. The RCGP's QOF QI project is funded by NHS England and NHS Improvement. It is a partnership with NHS EI, the Health Foundation, National Institute of Health and Care Excellence, and the RCGP. The project's been running since 2019 and has produced 10 QOF QI modules and accompanying resources. This year, we have been busy producing learning materials to support general practice carry out QOF activity on the two current modules, early cancer diagnosis and care of people with learning disabilities. Today, we're going to be talking about the learning disability module, but if you're interested in this work, more resources and information can be found on the RCGP website, which is rcgp.org.uk/QOFQI. And you can also find further resources in QI in general on the QI Ready portal. And you can find that at qiready.rcgp.org.uk. And all of these links will be in the description of the podcast, wherever you get your podcast. So what's the purpose of this podcast? Why listen to us talk today? Our aims today are to provide enough information for individuals and teams to better understand what's being asked of them with regard to QOF and to know where to look for further help. So I'm now going to ask Simon Stockhill to introduce himself.
Hi, Joe. Hi, everyone. I'm Simon Stockhill, and I'm a GP in rural North Yorkshire, and I'm also a PCN clinical director, and I've been working with the QOF QI team as one of the clinical champions for the last 3 or 4 years now.
Brilliant. So to start us off then, Simon, can you briefly explain what QOF is and what it means to general practice this year?
Yeah, so people will be familiar with the Quality and Outcomes Framework and the fact that a couple of years ago, a review was undertaken by NHS England to update it for the next few years, trying to move away from it being too much of a tick box exercise and going back to its original first principles of trying to improve quality for of patient care in long-term conditions in general practice. And one of the key new changes was to introduce a new quality improvement domain into the Quality and Outcomes Framework. And that's what the Royal College of GPs, along with our partners, have been working on, creating those 10 modules with the supporting resources that have been gradually introduced over the next few years. Obviously, we're all familiar with the fact that COVID has intervened over the last 18 months or so, and therefore the two modules that were initially introduced last year have been continued into the current year to allow practices more time to continue the work that either that they started but weren't able to complete or that people may not even have had a chance to start because of the amount of change processes and improvement quality in other areas that they've had to be doing as a result of the pandemic. So that's the purpose of this. And obviously, the focus of today's podcast is to look at the learning disability project within that QOF QI domain.
So you're anticipating my next question, which is what's the rationale for including learning disability in QOF this year?
So the key things with learning disability is that we've known for some years now that people with a learning disability are at higher risk of a number of physical health conditions and also sometimes experience poorer access and poorer services from the NHS, including, I'm afraid to say, from general practice. And we know that actually that has led to a conclusion by various specialist things like the confidential inquiry into deaths of people with learning disability, that up to 42% of deaths of people with a learning disability are premature and potentially avoidable. We know that the gap in life expectancy for people with a learning disability is over 20 years compared to the general population. And many of the commonest causes of death for people with learning disability are potentially avoidable, certainly in terms of premature death. So the idea is that this is an important important, significant health inequality. And of course, like many other health inequalities, I'm afraid that COVID-19 has exacerbated and accentuated the differences and those inequalities. So we've seen that for people with learning disabilities, they are in with COVID, they are five times more likely than their peers, their age, similar age cohort, to end up in hospital if they contract COVID. And the death rate is eight times higher than the population at large. So this is a really significant issue in terms of that reducing health inequalities agenda that's so important to many of us in general practice.
Yeah, some shocking statistics. So there are two indicators included in the care of people with learning disabilities module. Can you briefly explain what they demonstrate?
Yeah, now this is the bit that's for lots of GPs and practice managers and other staff in practice is something that's quite difficult to get used to, because the two indicators are really incredibly general. They simply ask, the first one asks that practices can demonstrate continuous quality improvement activity focused on learning disabilities as specified within the QoF guidance. And the second one, that you participate in some level of local primary care network activity to share your QI work, to discuss the learning from the quality activity that you are undertaking. And that ideally this should be in a minimum of two network peer review meetings. Now, people often then assume that there'll be a whole series of other targets that they have to reach within this to in order to achieve the QoF payment, and you don't. You just simply have to be able to demonstrate that you have tried to do something that is a quality improvement activity. The targets that are set within that quality improvement activity, what you as a practice decide are your improvement aims and your achievement against those aims, are purely for your benefit and to share with your neighbours in your PCN neighbouring practices. NHS England are undertaking an overall national evaluation of the impact of this, but that is different from the actual payment mechanisms. So as long as you can demonstrate to your local commissioner, the CCG, or NHS England, that you have undertaken some activity and there's a very simple monitoring template that just needs to be completed, then that is it in order to achieve this. It is giving much more trust to practices to say, you know what you need to do locally, crack on and do that. It is giving a real sense of professionalism and less tick boxing, but allowing people to introduce the culture of quality improvement, specifically in this for people with learning disability, into their practices.
Okay, so can you maybe talk about the purpose of participating in QoF? What's the intended objective?
I think there are probably two main objectives that I would highlight. The first is the practical thing around actually improving the care for patients with learning disability, and in particular, NHS England, I know, are looking to see whether there can be improvements made to the proportion of people thought to have learning disability who actually are on GP practice registers. In 2016, it was thought that only about a quarter of those people with learning disability were actually coded as such and on a GP practice register. We know that some work has been done across the country to improve that, but it is still likely that people's learning disability registers can still be improved. So that's one area. Another area is the annual health check for people with learning disability. It has very variable uptake across the country and between practices, and the idea is to aim to try and improve the uptake of those annual health checks, also to increase the optimization of use of medicines, so that appropriate medicines are being used, and also that what are called reasonable adjustments are understood and recorded and implemented. So these are changes that practices can reasonably make in how patients access services, for example. That may just be something as simple as allowing somebody with a learning disability extra time, or a different way of waiting at the surgery to be seen, or a different way of communicating, for instance, use of video consultations rather than telephone consultations, for example, whatever is appropriate for that individual, as discussed with them and their carers, to ensure that people with a learning disability get the best possible access bespoke to them in order to access the services that are on offer in practices. The other big area, I guess, is a cultural change. So rather than general practice simply being told what to do and given a whole set of targets, it's an encouragement to say to people, actually, if you are developing a culture within your practice of evaluating the sort of work that you're doing, looking for where changes can be made that lead to improvements in the care of patients, and you're using a systematic approach to doing that, and that sort of approach becomes just the way you do things in your practice, then that would be over time the kind of cultural change around improving quality becoming just part and parcel of what every practice does all the time. Then that would be the biggest change possible, and that would be great to see.
So what do practices have to do?
So for most people listening to this podcast, this will be the key bit. What are the steps that you need to start to undertake now? Well, the first thing I'd say is get a team of the willing. Who's interested in doing this? So it doesn't matter. Anybody can do QI. You don't need formal qualifications. You don't need to be a clinician. You can be anybody who's interested in doing it. So ideally, it needs to be some people who maybe are involved in the care of people with learning disability, but get two or three of you potentially together start the process of seeing what you can do in terms of QI. The first step of that will be to evaluate what you currently do. You can't possibly start to change what you do in your practice to improve things if you don't know how well or not well you're currently doing within your practice. So have a look at what the size of your register is, and does that appear appropriate for your population. There are a whole set of tools that NHS England shared with us in practices a couple of years ago to help us to increase the accuracy of our registers. So I would encourage you to look at those resources, to run the searches that are on there, to identify those people that are picked up by the searches, who to see whether applying your own clinical judgment you feel they are people who should be included in the learning disability register, and to ensure that the services that you're provided are provided to the right people in a timely way. So another issue would be, and this is certainly, for instance, what we did in our practice, is evaluate how many people on your learning disability register actually received an annual health check in the last 12 months. You may want to take that back into the pre-pandemic era, or you may want to look at the last 12 months to see what the take-up rate was. You might also, for instance, want to look at what your flu vaccination rate or your COVID vaccination rates were in this population. And you may want to look then also at, you know, are you recording? Do people know what reasonable adjustments are? Are they something that are recorded properly in the notes in a way that's then accessible to all members of the practice team? So the first step is to evaluate what you're currently doing, and then choose one or two of those areas where you think you can start to make a difference. So then you create what your plans are for the changes that you want to make. And what I'd normally say to people is, don't make massive changes to everything. Just make one or two small changes and then test it out. See whether it's worked, see whether it's had the intended effect. So that's when implementing the change that you're coming to. It's good to have a smart aim of what you want to achieve. So you're clear that you want to achieve this increase in your uptake from, let's say, you know, 20% to 80% over the course of a 6-month period or 12-month period. And you might want to break that down and say, actually, we want to just achieve 3 extra people per month receiving their health check. These numbers are purely dependent on the size of your list, obviously. And then you might want to test something out in the first couple of months to see if that way of inviting people in increases the uptake rate, for example, for that. And then you review what you're doing continually to see whether or not you are achieving the aims that you set out to, whether the measurements that you've put in place, for instance, searches for uptake of COVID vaccinations or uptake of health checks, are showing the improvements that you want to do. And then you effectively, you're back to the evaluation part again. And then if that doesn't seem to be working, then you stop that and try something else. If it is working, then you might want to continue doing it or increase the number of people that you're calling in in the next few weeks and things. So it's what's called a PDSA task, a plan, do, study, act, simple cycles of improvement, knowing what you're doing, thinking of some changes, measuring the impact, doing making the changes, measuring the impact of those changes and evaluating that, and then starting from scratch and then going back around those circles continually, so that you're continually making improvements to the care for patients.
Great. And you alluded to your own practice there, and I just wondered what your experience was of implementing some of this in your own practice and how that's worked out for you.
Yeah. So we had a small team, which was just one of our admin team, one of our medical secretaries, and a really enthusiastic healthcare assistant, and me. And we met a few times. The admin team member and the HCA had already gone through the searches that NHS England had produced for all of us, and had made the list more accurate in our practice. We're a relatively small practice with relatively older populations, so actually our the number of people on our learning disability list is relatively small, but we had run those searches to make it, we think, as accurate as possible. But what we found is, of the 16 people on our list, only one person in the previous year had actually completed a learning disability health check. We weren't inviting people in, we weren't doing them opportunistically, and also we only had about one in three of our patients on the learning disability register received a flu vaccine in the preceding year. So we felt we had a long way to go, and actually we did make a start on this through the pandemic, simply because it felt like such an important thing to be doing, given that frankly our performance was pretty rubbish beforehand. So we set up a system of calling people in, obviously, that at times some of those calls were done face to face, some of them were done by video, some by telephone, some obviously needing to involve third parties because of the particular disability of that individual. But we were delighted that by the end of that year, we had actually achieved 100%, which was more than the target. We'd set a target of 75%, recognising the challenges within the pandemic. But because the numbers for our practice were quite small, we were able to contact and undertake a learning disability health check in 100% of the patients on our list, which was really, really rewarding achievement. We weren't quite as good as a successful with the flu campaign, but we did manage to go from one in three to two in three, but still some work to go. And we've, I think, learned some things about what we could do differently in terms of inviting people in for the flu vaccines earlier, and potentially this year, as we know, with the COVID booster campaigns, potentially co-administering that if the regulations allow, when they're published later, hopefully this month, that can be done alongside the COVID vaccine campaign as well. On the COVID vaccine campaign, that came in a little bit later than we were running our flu campaign, and I'm delighted that we did actually manage to get 100% people on our learning disability register being offered and taking up the vaccine. One has still so far only had one dose because they were a bit hesitant initially, but everybody else has now had both doses, and we're hopeful that one patient will come forward for their second dose in due course. So some things that we've learned a lot, and it's been really, really exciting. Yes, there was a lot of work put in, particularly I think by the healthcare assistant and the admin team, says, of chasing these people up, and then obviously the doctors, not just myself but my other colleagues, undertaking the more detailed sort of health checks and conversations with people. But it felt like an important piece of work to do, was good to see that the results were there.
Well, you say it's an important piece of work, and I was just going to ask you to round things off by asking what your sort of thoughts are on the importance of the module and engaging with it.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the beginning of the podcast, and we talked about what the sorts of numbers of people were in terms of the premature death rate and the complications around COVID, it just felt really important to be doing the beginning of what we could do as a practice to try and identify problems early and to provide that support. But probably the best moment was the mother of one of our patients with learning disability, who was helping her son with the consultation. She said to me at the end, she said, "You know, I know how busy the NHS is at the moment in the middle of all of this pandemic, but this is the first time in years that I feel that somebody's really taken an interest in him, in his health and well-being. And it, it's really good. So thank you. And that was probably one of the highlights of what's been a tremendously difficult year for us, as it has for everybody, just kind of feeling like not only we were doing the right thing in terms of numbers, but actually the impact it had on people and the importance that they put on that. So if we ever needed encouragement to carry on doing this and to continually improve our access for patients and the uptake of health checks and vaccination campaigns, that nudge from that patient's mum was absolutely it. So it was one of the highlights from last year.
That's brilliant. Okay, Simon, thank you for your time today and for talking us through this. I'm just going to sort of wrap things up by saying that I hope that's provides some useful insight into the learning disability module and what to do next for the listeners. And depending on when you listen to the podcast, which has been recorded in early August 2021, we have a series of webinars coming up, and they're on the other module, cancer. Early diagnosis of cancer, that's on the 31st of August. We'll be looking at QI and QOF in PCNs on the 7th of September, and we'll also be discussing learning disability module in more depth on the 21st of September. All of the webinars will be in the evenings, and you can find more information about them in the description of the podcast. We also have a companion podcast to this on the early cancer diagnosis module, so please look out for that as well. More information on this, as I say, is in the description of the podcast. So I just want to close by saying thank you once again to Simon for talking us through the module, and thank you to you for listening. Goodbye.